CliffCentral.com.
Yeah, it's called Faded, Alan Walker. 7 minutes to eight. CliffCentral.com this morning. We're launching TouchCentral.fm Thursday morning live right here. And you'll be able to listen to more good music, more interesting people, interviews, opinions, points of view, people like Dineo Ranaga, people like O'Neill, people like Lerato Chabalala. She'll only join us next Monday, though. She's in America at the moment. She's in New York as we speak. So lots of exciting stuff coming. Tebow Touch's show, the proper launch at 3 p.m. Thursday afternoon.
Thursday the 1st.
It's the first time he'll be on air since he left Metro. A whole 2 months ago, almost.
Time, huh? She flies.
Time is ticking. People are waiting for him. All right, listen here. We've got a lot of people who listen to us who are very smart with tech, right? They know what they want. They know what kind of products they're into. I know a lot of people are Apple fans. A lot of people are Samsung and Android and Windows and all kinds of other fans. But I saw it actually came up as a news headline, which shows you how much the news has changed. About Apple planning a MacBook Air and iMac refresh for October, and they've got new Apple Pencils launching. Do you want to know anything about this? Are you interested?
Look,
Apple Pencils?
Yeah.
It doesn't hurt to know more.
You know that they've got the iPad Pro, which is a big A4 size iPad.
But that's the size of a laptop, isn't it?
Well, for people who are designers.
I think it's one of the, exactly, there we go. It's for designers who then want to actually design.
Okay. I get it.
I wouldn't want one of these things. I wouldn't know how to use it. It comes with a pencil. Now, Steve Jobs hated the idea of a pencil. He said, if you can't use your fingers, don't bother with the iPad.
Yeah.
Right? And a lot of people are very excited about the upcoming iPhone, the MacBook Pro refreshes, but a report today from Bloomberg details a bit more about what the company has up its sleeve for the rest of the year. They say that in addition to the new iPhone and MacBook Pro, they're planning to refresh the iMac and the MacBook Air and will introduce a new 5K display. I mean, these displays are becoming so good that it almost looks like you're looking through a window. I mean, look at the wallpapers that people have on their laptops now. The resolution is so incredible that you actually think you're staring out of the window. It's so magnificent in terms of its depth and its color and its clarity. It's just about impossible to tell the difference between something like that and a massive HD screen. You know what I mean. So the iPad Pro, they're said to be planning new features for the Apple Pencil. For instance, the company has tested giving users the ability to annotate content in applications across iOS, including Mail, Messages, Safari, and more. Currently, the Apple Pencil only supports full functionality in selected applications, so they're going to spread that around. And they're expected only to refresh the hardware of the iPad lineup next year, but they've got a new 10.5-inch iPad Pro coming out and a bunch of other stuff. And you know, whenever Apple do this, there's a huge amount of excitement, and then people like me always go, afterwards, because we want more. I expect these things to be able to do a scan of my body and diagnose cancer. I expect it to be able to figure out the problems of poverty in India. I expect it to solve the conflict in the Middle East.
So you're not asking for much then?
No, I don't think so. I just want everything. What features would you really like from technology that you don't currently get? I'm being serious. I mean, we've got ways of connecting with family and friends. We've got ways of getting the content we care about from our phones. We've got means of avoiding traffic. We've got GPS. We've got what else is on my main screen? We've got sharing of pictures. You've got the watch. You've got the photos. You've got the clock. You've got the alarms. You've got Siri. You know, all of that stuff. What would you really like from your phone that you don't currently get?
It's such a good question, because nothing comes across instantly here.
Mm.
You've actually got to think, because you're already thinking, like, it does so much.
I know Flax has got ideas of what he wants. By the way, you've been vindicated a couple of times by people who said...
If I'm vindicated?
It means that they've stood up for you and said that you were onto something. What was the example the other day of something that Flax had said would be a good idea? And one of our listeners said, yeah, Flax came up with the idea for that ages ago. I can't remember what exactly it was. It was some tech thing that you'd predicted, basically. You're a savant.
Define savant.
You have genius capabilities.
So listen to this. Imagine...
He just moves straight on.
Imagine if you didn't even have fucking to touch idiot. Your phone. You could have like a microchip in your head, which is programmed to your phone. All you have to do is think of what you want to do and your phone
and
does it.
And then it does it for you.
You think you want to open the app, it opens the app.
You know that that's not far-fetched. That's that fine line between biology and technology, where they're busy figuring out how that interface is going to work. And there are neurologists and tech experts who are getting together and brainstorming ways to connect nerves to circuits. Imagine that.
If you think of it, you think of like opening up an app. So you move. You send like a signal to your finger to move to the app, to push the button.
Well, look at how Stephen Hawking talks.
Yeah, you just got to remove one step.
Mm-hmm.
Find a way of removing that step, and then just bam.
I'm telling you, Flax, you're smarter than most of us know.
Or
think
give
of
you
this
credit
idea.
For.
But,
or,
but
what, or what?
Or give him credit for.
Right.
So I've always wanted one of these. So as soon as you come out the shower, you walk through sort of like a tunnel.
Yeah.
And this tunnel blows hot air at you to dry you instantly. So while you walk into your closet, you dry instantly without having to use a towel, reach for a towel, anything like that.
Oh, you know what? Thank you, Shannon. Shannon's just reminded me. Your idea, remember you said we could vote from our phones?
Oh, yes.
Yeah, so last week while you were away, we had Vinny Lingham come in. And Vinny told us about it. He's working on exactly this.
In America, though.
Yeah, but I mean, it might come here. Look at you. Ahead of the curve.
Ahead of the curve, I like that.
There we go. I won't use words that we need to define every time.
Like vindicate.
and savant.
I'm glad he didn't say define head of the curve.
I see lots of news coming on about the SACP and Kasatu saying things about the ANC. And, you know, the SACP, I mean, Bladen Zimande suddenly decided he wanted to speak up over the weekend. He may not be minister for very long of higher education. And I don't know how many people would be upset about that.
I mean, too little, too late. Yeah, you know, all these right. ANC people who are suddenly coming forward and
suddenly
finding their voice.
Suddenly finding a conscience.
It's a little too late for some of us, you know. Yeah. We needed to hear your voices earlier. Now it's just like, oh, well, we've moved on. We found a new partner.
I see now Kasatu are starting to say similar things. They're saying, there's this thing called presidentialism. Watch that become a word. Where the president is the focus of all of this. And where his interests are given a category called presidentialism. Huh? I'm telling you, it's the most exciting time to be in South Africa and to be alive. I've said this for the longest while now, and it's true. There are so many things going on behind the scenes right now. Machinations. There's a word. Do you want to know what machinations are?
Yeah. Define that.
I've got to stop using these words.
Yeah, really.
Flax looks at me like I'm mentally ill. Things that are happening. Things that are going on. Machine moving parts, essentially. Machination. Machination. Right? Got it?
Okay.
Yeah.
It's a terrible definition, but you get the idea. What else is there going on, Mubs? What do we need to know?
Well, I'll tell you what. Today is D-Day for the committee that has been tasked with finding a replacement for the public protector, right?
But I thought we'd decided.
No. They have nominated or recommended Advocate Busisiwe Mkhwebane, right?
Yeah, so get on with it.
Today is their final meeting day. And then what will happen next is that the committee will then table the report to the National Assembly before it is considered. That will only happen on Wednesday, the 7th of September, so next week.
How many steps?
So many of steps. Because after that, the president is the one who gets to make the final call on this person, right? I just want to know what happens if the president finds the recommended person not to be his favorite. So then what? We go back to the drawing board? It's a very laborious process.
So much complication that comes in then.
Completely. And then I don't know if you heard about this big fight that's happening between the Treasury and Eskom.
Yeah, I don't know what this is. Will you explain it to me like I'm an idiot? Because I see suddenly Brian Molefe is involved in this argument between Pravin and Hawks. And what does Eskom have to do with this?
Basically, the South African Treasury decided that they wanted to do a probe into some of the coal contracts between the power utility and one particular company. The reason for these probes is because the company in question is linked to the Gupta family, right? So there are suspicions that there have been nefarious activities that took place there in the awarding of these contracts. The company in question is Tegeta Exploration and Resources, right?
Okay.
Gupta-linked company. So Treasury decided we want to conduct some probes. And then Treasury came back and said, Eskom are blocking us from conducting the probes that we want to do. They're blocking us from getting the information that we are trying to get. And now there's this big fight between the Treasury and Eskom. It's now become a case of he said, she said. So Treasury saying Eskom have blocked us. Eskom saying that is a complete and utter lie. Which is why Brian Molefe has been roped into this whole process. Also the finance minister.
So clearly, I mean, what we know then is that Brian Molefe is now also in the Gupta camp.
It would seem so.
It would seem that he has been bought as well. These are some realizations we've got to start making, and we've got to stop worrying about unimportant nonsense distractions, and we've got to start paying attention to how various important state-owned enterprises, arms of the state, and important players in important positions are being acquired like assets by one very, very influential, powerful family. This should worry everyone in this country. This should keep you up at night. Forget about black girls' hair at high schools, with all due respect. Let her have her hair any way she likes it. It's not going to change the world. And not a goddamn thing about a hairstyle is going to be as important as what's going on with this Gupta family. We should all be as angry as we are on social media about hair. We should be about this family. There are so many things that do not matter that get people all fired up. Margaret van Wyk's pussy, for heaven's sake. And people are worrying about this? The whole state's about to be captured by a bunch of people who weren't even born here. And we're worrying about hair and beaver shots and Harambe.
Well, Harambe died for our sins, Gareth.
Fuck Harambe. Fuck him.
Right, there is important stuff to be discussed here. Everybody calm down. All right, except about this one thing. All right, so here's a Mantla, my boy, who says, Gareth, please get Christina Hoff Summers on the show to explain first, second, and third wave feminism to all these oppressed and offended young kids. Yeah, she's unbelievable. I think we must prioritize that. Flex, Christina Hoff Summers, she's an incredibly smart woman. She's studied feminism from every angle. And she's got an unconventional take on things, which I think will help inform a lot of people who seem to think that feminism is a one-dimensional thing. It's about glass ceilings and women and men being equal or unequal. And it should be quite a simple thing because actually, these are not complicated things to figure out. Men and women should have equal opportunities. They should be paid the same. They should have the same level of status and opportunity in society. That's all. That's how it should be. But it's become this mad second, third wave thing where there are different definitions applied to everything. And a bunch of crazies in this place. So yeah, that's a great idea, Mandla. We will take your suggestion very seriously. Jared says, if you had to put a chip in my head, it would be very dangerous. I would be giving a presentation from my phone and then boom, porn would show up on the screen.
Ah.
Right. Think about that.
Well, you just learn to control yourself, I guess. One track mind.
Gerrit says, great show this morning again. Thank you for the great entertainment. And Craig says, get the old lady to be the mascot, and maybe you can use the Show Us Your Goods campaign to promote testicular and ovarian cancer awareness. I don't know which old lady you're referring to.
Yeah, Margaret, maybe?
I don't know. She's old. She didn't strike me as old. Manscaping product sales will triple, says Vaynant, if you have to do this Show Us Your Goods day.
As they should.
And then we'd take pride in what we've got going on down there.
Yeah, in case you missed it earlier, Ben came up with a suggestion to stop all revenge porn and to stop people from being so excited about childish stuff like each other's genitalia. Ben says we should all just have a day where we just whip it all out and everybody gets it over and done with. And we can move on. Just smack it out there.
I just put mine out there. I'll do it again.
Oh sure.
That sounded very impressive.
I didn't expect it.
It's right in front of you. My belly can't make eye contact just yet, but she'll warm to it.
I wasn't expecting
here come the police.
To sound that strong, Ben, when you dropped it.
Well.
Wow. That's very brave of you, Ben. I don't know whether I'd be prepared to do the same thing.
Oh, Gareth, you've got to back up ideas in life, don't you?
Oh, my God.
Oh, some people are offended. All right, in a moment or two, we're going to speak to Lyle Turner. I met Lyle a while ago. He's climbed... I mean, this guy is not afraid. We know how dangerous it can be to go into these high-altitude environments, to put your body through hell, to climb to the top of some disgustingly high mountain. And I mean, when you talk about high mountains, what's the king of high mountains?
Everest.
Of course. Highest mountain in the world. Highest peak on Earth. Highest point of land. It's basically so high you could see the planets from there.
Well, it's basically so high that's how high planes go.
Yeah.
You see planes flying.
Right. And he is only 26. He's on Everest when the 7.8 magnitude earthquake tore through base camp last year. Do you remember that?
Sure. That was such a tragic story.
Yo! I mean, as if the mountain isn't scary enough, then you have an earthquake come along and, I mean, you should be covered by an avalanche. That's the end of you. No one will ever find you again. You take your life in your hands when you do this kind of thing. So he's an entrepreneur, a philanthropist, and he is a speed climber. He climbed Kilimanjaro in 11 hours and 7 minutes. That's unbelievable. I know people who've taken a whole week to get up Kilimanjaro. This guy is 11 hours and 7 minutes. Talk about getting shit done. Huh? So we'll speak to him in a moment or two. We'll take your calls, 0861-555-189. Tell us what you're up to this morning. And, hey, by the way, if you've got some suggestions for music, because, you know, there's a lot of, we're going to suddenly be playing a lot more music from Thursday. And maybe you've got some suggestions. Let everybody have their say while we're still figuring out this stuff. And I can guarantee you what we've got from our side is going to blow you away, but maybe you've got some ideas of your own. You could tell us about those too. Email us, message us to WeChat, you can tweet us, you can call us. There are 1,000 ways to get in contact, and we want you to use all of them. 11 minutes after 8, Tuesday, it's almost the end of August. Yeah, how's that, huh? You like that fine-ass mess, Mubs? That's what that's called.
Yeah, that sounds good.
I got a fine-ass mess this morning. I like that a lot. It's by Mr. Probs. Hey, do you know who we're busy lining up to come and talk to us on the show?
Who?
Omi. You know the guy who did, I think that I found myself a cheerleader.
Oh, yeah, Damon's favorite song.
Right.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah, that'll be cool.
Is Flex working on that one?
Pashida and Nilesh. We've got a whole, you know, we've got this whole back room of people who are busy kicking up a storm, getting us guests and all kinds of interesting people. And one of these interesting people is sitting right in front of me today. I'm so happy you're alive because... There was a chance that you might not make it off that mountain not so long ago. And I'm not being dramatic here. Lyle Turner was on the at base camp on Everest when that earthquake hit. And you know, people died, villages were destroyed, avalanches ensued, and some people never made it back. And really, you were very lucky. And thank goodness you're here to join us this morning. Lyle Turner, everybody. He's an entrepreneur, a philanthropist, and he has speed climbed Kilimanjaro. He's also the youngest South African to summit Mount Everest. And look at him. He's alive and he's sitting in front of me. What's up, dude? Are you all right?
Yeah, all good. Thanks for having me, guys.
Sure. What kind of a death wish do you have climbing these mountains?
A little bit of a nutter, I must say.
Don't you get enough of a thrill just, you know, going to the shops or...
No, it doesn't quite cut it.
Driving on the roads in South Africa, that's scary.
Yeah, it is scary enough. But there's something about being out there that, you know, draws me to those places. So it's always a nice special time out in the outdoors, you know.
Were you one of those kids who used to climb on top of desks and build like pyramids of cushions on the bed and
climb trees and build tree houses? And
how many injuries do you have?
I've actually never broken a bone.
You're joking?
No, serious. Played rugby and all sorts, but I've actually never broken a bone.
Tell me, when you climb mountains like this, you have to be really fit, right? Mm. I mean, you can't be even slightly overweight, because taking a breath would knock you out at that altitude.
Yes.
What's it like breathing on the summit of Mount Everest?
Well, a lot of people, when they get high up, they can take as much as 10 breaths per step, you know, so it's no joke. The air does feel a lot thinner up there, but, you know, it's just amazing, especially the views. But, yeah, you know, once you're actually climbing, your heart rate is through the roof, you know, just barely moving. So, you know, just simple activities up there is gets your heart racing, even climbing in your sleeping bag, all these sorts of things.
Let's start with Everest, because I think it's a place that most of us will never go. Do you have to go in the summer? Is there a specific time of year that is safer to climb? Other times you just can't go up there?
So April, May is your only window. And by April, May, even if you were acclimatized, you won't be able to summit because the winds are too great up there. So May is your only weather window, because it gets warm enough for you to, warm enough, minus 60 degrees, for you to reach the summit. And that jet stream goes over 30,000 foot. So that's your only window. And sometimes it's only a day, you know, a couple of days, and then sometimes only a day window.
And beyond a certain altitude, there are no people, there's no settlements of any kind. There's no evidence that humans have been there at all.
Yes.
When you get to the top, what do you see up there? Are there like 1,000 flags of people who planted their flags, or is everything just covered in snow and you can't...
Look, when I was there, there was nothing. So often people take a lot of prayer flags and they'll leave them up there. But, you know, storm comes through and it'll blow everything away.
So it's constantly being cleared up.
Constantly. Wow. You know, it's being scarred by that jet stream that lowers and then, you know, pretty much wipes out everything. But... on the summit, it's the first time you can look over into Tibet if you've climbed from the Nepal side. So you look over and you can see, you know, lights in Tibet. So, you know, it is quite, you know, those knife edge ridges, it is quite daunting.
So did you go up at night?
Yes.
Wow. Did you not, you didn't stay up there to see the morning sun come up? And
no, unfortunately not. I summited at 3:30 a.m. Oh. And so I got all the nice views on the way down. But the people that were climbing that I knew, they summited at 9:30 in the morning. So I got ahead of people just so I could, you know, not get stuck in a long line of people. That was always something I wanted to avoid on Everest.
Yeah, well, there are lots of things that you want to avoid on Everest. Did you go past any of the dead people who they just leave up there?
Yeah, you know, it is something you can't get away from, but we did have very bad...
What, do you have to push them out of the way? I mean, is it crowded with dead people?
Look, everyone's been moved off the trail, and it is something you do if someone's on the rope. You know, you just unclip them and just push them off the face if they've passed away. But, you know, you don't see, from the previous year, you won't see too many, especially this year because we had bad snow conditions. But
they just get buried under the snow. And
so... You know, and then if people, you know, if you can move someone just a few meters.
What, do you push them with your foot or something?
It takes a lot of effort at those altitudes, so there's not much you can do for people to get them down, you know, so.
But Lyle, when you go past a dead person on Everest, I mean, it's like a frozen carcass, right? But do you sometimes think, wow, I mean, on a bad day, that could be me?
No, absolutely. You have to think, what did that person, you know, what was their mistake kind of thing, just to also take it home for you, you know, that it's a realization that it's, you know, you're nothing special there. And no one can do anything for you there. That's the big thing. You're on your own. And so, you know, it is something that we're not designed to see, I don't think, you know, let alone with the earthquake. You know, that was, you know, much worse than what I'd ever seen.
Tell me about the earthquake, because you were in the middle of that. I think we spoke to you on the phone.
Yes.
And it was the day after it had happened. How did you manage to survive? Because a lot of people around you were taken out by that, and a lot of buildings that collapsed, and there are a lot of people who were blown off into the distance, and, you know, it's adverse enough without an earthquake. Mm.
Look, I was in my two-man tent when the earthquake, so when I started the ground shaking, and subsequently I knew I needed to get out of my tent. I just had this, you know, in the commotion, I was like, you know, get out. I never wanted to be stuck in a tent, you know, and so I was putting on my shoes, and it actually knocked me off my feet. That was the severity of the earthquake. And the only reason why I survived that, I ran into our gear tent where we keep, so pretty much everyone that's in our group, we keep our duffel bags in one big tent.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where I ran to, because I just knew it was, you know, a bigger object, you know, and it was much, my two-man tent, I found it, you know, washed down with the avalanche. So if I was in there, I was gone, yeah.
Really? I mean, people who you were there up on the mountain with, They were killed.
Yeah, not part of our. We were four people, but you know, there's all your base camps. You know, all the people that are climbing. So you've seen them in the ice fall. You know, you easily pass someone coming up, and you're going down the one day, and the next day you're choppering him out, and he wasn't so lucky. You know, so it is that extreme where, you know, you just also question why you were saved. You know, and you know, you make it count then.
When an earthquake strikes at base camp, shouldn't you just pack up your shit and go home? Like, it's a kind of a sign from the universe. Like, this is not a place where we're friendly to humans. Nature hates you. Get out of here. Go home and live a happy life in South Africa where there's sun and it's not minus 60 and the wind isn't going to blow you off the mountaintop. Go home. I mean, what's wrong with you? Why didn't you at this point give up and get out of there?
Look, I always had a different calling to go to Everest, you know, and for me, I think if it was for personal gain and or ego thing, you know, some people, that is the objective. I don't think I would ever step foot on the mountain, you know, because, you know, there is that element of Russian roulette, so to speak. So, you know, for me, you know, it was a long time coming. You know, I've always wanted to bring awareness to Huntington's disease, and so
what's the reason for this? Apparently it runs in your family.
Yeah, so
what is Huntington's disease?
HD is a neurodegenerative brain disorder, so it's a defect of chromosome 4. So it's that mutant protein, the Huntington protein, that has a lot more repeats in Huntington's.
So your family are like X-Men.
Yeah.
You've got this one mutation.
Mutation.
But so how does it affect people? What does it do to you?
So it's hereditary. So if your parents have the gene, you have a 50% chance of inheriting that gene.
Oh.
And then it will come about at some point in your life. So, you know, in layman's terms, we always say it's like Parkinson's, Alzheimer's and schizophrenia all at the same time. So those uncontrolled movements like in Parkinson's is apparent.
Does it affect the central nervous system?
Yes. So then, and then some people, the neurodegenerative is a lot more aggressive, and then the uncontrolled movements are more or less, so, you know. So
your brain just starts shutting down.
Yeah.
That is a horrible thing to think about.
And it's over time, you know, up to 20 years where people degenerate really slowly, you know. So it's eventually they need full-on care, you know, 24 hours a day.
So who in your family is suffering from this at the moment, or who was the last one to?
So the last one was my dad's butt, and so I grew up, I also grew up not knowing what my grandfather passed away from. I always knew there was something, but, you know, it wasn't made known to me. But I traced the family tree all the way back to 1820s, where we left the UK, you know. So, you know, it's taken four generations to work out. So, You know, we have extended family and that's still impacted. But, you know, in terms of my kids and the kids, you know, my cousins and stuff, it's not going to have any effect. So,
you don't have kids yet, but if you did, they wouldn't. Up on Everest, you know, some female Sherpa, like got a little blonde child that's living up in the mountains. Where's my daddy? And why do I have this desire to climb to the top of the mountain the whole time? So if you have kids, it won't necessarily pass on to them.
It can't.
And do
skip
you
that.
Have this gene?
No, I don't have the gene.
Oh,
so it can't.
What
I can't,
a relief!
I can't pass it on.
Wouldn't it be terrible if you did?
Yes,
because you don't have a say. It happens.
And look, I grew up, you know, even when I started my foundation, I didn't know. So, you know, it's only within the last 1.5 years which I have known, you know, so it does greatly alter your life, you know, the way you work, you know, what you want to do with your life, because it might be cut short, you know, so you kind of got to go for what you want, you know.
I could imagine, like, I'm so paranoid. Every time I get a headache, I think, oh, no, it's...
Yeah.
At the end of my life, I'm definitely, this is brain cancer or something. It's obviously just a headache, but I'm paranoid and I'm neurotic about these things. You could imagine in your family, any time you start feeling a little bit woozy, you start jumping to conclusions.
Is it the start, yes.
I mean, this is a horrible thing, and how many people does it affect?
So we haven't done a prevalence study in South Africa, but in the UK and the States, it's 18 in every 100,000. So it is a rare condition. But the point being, you know, it affects – there's so many people that are in an unknown state, you know, like your kids if you have the gene, you know, siblings. So, you know, the actual roll-off, there's a lot more people that are impacted. Kids become caregivers for elders, you know, so it impacts a lot more people. So, yeah, it is a, you know, it's a brutal kind of condition.
Let's go from the important stuff to something ridiculous. Hugo wants to know. Hugo just messaged us on WeChat. He said, please tell us about all the poo that is becoming an issue on the mountain. Is that a problem? Like humans are shitting everywhere?
This comes up on every mountain.
Yeah.
What do you mean? Is there not enough room for people to take a shit on a mountain? What's going on here?
Even on Kilimanjaro, there's always, you know, people will downplay, you know, what a magnificent area it is, saying it's dirty and stuff. But a lot of the mountains they have, like Kilimanjaro, for instance, it was a problem at a stage, but it's been cleaned up, you know, very nicely. you know, they have these microbes that, you know, these septic tanks.
What happens? Do all the people, is there a midden? Is there a place where everybody goes to shit?
Within your teams, you'll have a dedicated tent, and, you know, that's...
You do it in a tent?
Yeah, a little tent and a...
Well, do you want to do it out in the open?
I would
get frostbite on your...
I mean, you've got to be covered, right?
I don't know.
For privacy, what are you going to do?
What about the smell in the tent? I mean, it does not have a floor?
No.
Oh, the tent doesn't have a floor. So you just... So afterwards, who is the poor person who has to go and
But it's in like a big drum. So, you know, you make a little toilet in a big drum.
What do you mean?
Explain this. So like a 200-liter drum, okay?
I need to know the details.
So this is base camp, you know, 200-liter drum. You take a little toilet seat, so you actually design your little bathroom, toilet-liter drum, and that's your place.
And everyone else is also shat in that drum?
Yeah.
Doesn't it freeze? What happens?
I didn't expect things that closely go.
I'm curious about how this works. And then what do you take your own little toilet seat?
First, I must inspect the poo.
Yeah. Well, aren't you fascinated? Tell me, do you take your own seat? Is it like a fold-up seat, or what? How does the
and
seat
then
look?
The ones with the glow-in-the-dark sticker, because you don't have lights and
don't
electricity.
Confuse me.
So then,
no. I need to know. This is very important for some people who don't think about what goes into climbing a mountain. You have to carry your own toilet seat around?
Well, yeah. It depends what you want.
Don't you have enough stuff to carry? Can't you just squat on the ground like our ancestors used to and just, you know?
Yeah, but that's when the poo...
Squeeze out a soft serve.
That's when the poo accumulates. It's got to be collected,
in
right?
In the drum.
And then
transported down.
What?
Yes.
Yeah.
You have to take it. Can't you just roll it down the hill?
Yeah.
Gareth, you know...
and it explodes in some village. So there's some village at the bottom. People just going about their business, trying to like move water around and build a house. Suddenly a huge drum of human shit comes down.
I can just see them over now. Lyle's the top of this whatever mountains he's always done. He goes, you know, one of these days, I'll reenact this moment with an interview and talk about shit for 10 minutes.
Yeah.
I've scaled this so I can one day talk about shit.
Man, what a disgusting thing to have to do.
It's something that always comes up, though.
Just another thing you won't do, hey, Gareth?
I've never had the desire to climb a mountain.
So the movie Everest, right? Yeah. Now, people talk about that because it was recently on Mnet and it was a big deal.
Yes. Mm.
How accurate was it? Because the South Africans were portrayed as absolute doses in that movie.
Yeah.
And secondly, everything looked really harsh and like there's no structure. You basically just got to go when you can. Was it pretty accurate?
The lower parts of the mountain were relatively accurate, you know, especially the ice fall, you know, how dangerous that place is. It's a moving crevasse the whole time. Higher up, you know, just to simulate Everest is a bit difficult. So I didn't think they captured how exposed, you know, your summit attempt is, you know, because on the summit, if you fall left or right, you're going to fall 2,000 meters into Nepal or to Tibet or into Tibet. So I mean, whichever country you want to, you know, rest in, you must decide. You know, and it was hard. You know, I didn't.
Did you climb up the ridge?
Yes. And, you know, there's a section, the Cornish Traverse, where there's not enough space for your feet to be next to each other. It's a really short section, but you're literally toe-pointing in front of each other. You know, so it is really
to the side of the mountain.
Yeah. That section, there's no mountain. You're just on a cornice that you got to cross. So, you know, the movie up high for me didn't capture it as it should have. But you know, the kind of experiences, definitely. You know, that was based on the 1996 disaster on Everest, and you know, the South African team. There was a lot of controversy around us, even with our leadership. You know, was questioned. A few people quit before they even got to base camp. You know, because of leadership and, you know, issues. But you know, yeah, there are rumors we didn't help people at Camp 4, and you know, offer up our radio. But you know, it is just, you know, such an unforgiving environment. Sure. I guess we could have done something. But
now, is there, like, at the top, right, is there, like, a little plaque? Is there, like, anything?
No. How do you know when you got to the top?
Yeah,
because there's nothing else.
There's nothing else above you. You're so disorientated. You're like, yeah, this is good enough. And then everyone goes, okay, cool. But, like, how big is it? Do you get to the top and you can...
You were up there at night. Yeah. This is what I'm struggling to understand. So, did you have lights and torches and things so you could see? Oh, yeah, okay, this is the top...
You have a headlamp, basically. That's what you have. And you try to climb around the full moon, so there is a bit more natural light. So it's not just...
But you got the wind whistling around the whole time. It's just thoroughly unpleasant. You're like, okay, we're here. Let's get the hell out of here.
Look, right? That was my feeling. You know, for me, I always imagined I'd have a little moment at the top. Mm. But being nighttime, we had 30-mile-an-hour winds that night. So
someone's carrying the shit drum. And it's not glamorous at all.
Yeah.
Well, so how much stuff do you have to carry up there?
Well, some at night I carried minimal stuff. All I had was basically a medical kit, a spare pair of mittens, a pair of goggles, and then I had 300 mils of water. You know, I hydrated at Camp 4, so you're carrying as little as possible, and then two bottles of oxygen. So, you know, you're carrying as little as possible because weight at that altitude, you're carrying an extra kilo is like, you know, like extra 15 here. So,
what's the best and worst feeling about that part of the climb? I mean, obviously, the exhilaration that you're about to achieve something very few humans have done. But what are the physical realities of being up there?
Look, you have great risk of developing high altitude pulmonary edema and cerebral edema. So it's a buildup of fluids on the lungs and the brain. Because above 8,000 meters, there's not enough oxygen to sustain human life. So you kind of just dying in the death zone. And so the onset of those things can kill you quite quickly. So you want to move as fast as possible. So for me, being stuck in a line where I'm climbing slower than what I, you know, if I can be climbing faster, I always wanted to avoid other people, because then there's added risk to that. You know, if something happens, someone falls above you, you know, there's your decision affects a lot of other people. So for me, I wanted to be around as few people as possible.
Right. Yeah. Because the more people you have, the more risk.
Yes.
You know, if it's you against nature and it's you on your own, you've probably got a better chance than if you're hauling all these other people with you. Did you have to look around you and say, well, you know, if one of these friends of mine does something stupid, I'm going to have to cut him loose? Did you choose, like, who you would be willing to cut loose first and who you would have to get rid of in a case of an emergency? You have to think like a survivalist.
Yes. Look,
I'm not trying to be sarcastic or mean or you know,
look,
insensitive.
Yeah, look, there is a kind of mountain rule that you have as a group if you're experienced. And, you know, but for me, we always have with a strong team like that, you always have a sense of compassion. So if someone, although in those altitudes, you really can't do something for someone, no matter who it is. But, you know, you'll always do what you can for that person, you know, it's like spend some time with him.
You're like, well, if something happens to you, I'll come and move your body off the trail.
Yeah, you know, you got to know the environment which you are in, you know, and a lot of people, if there's been someone that's passed away, there's this big outcry and why can't they, you know, move the person or get them down safely if they're sick.
It's impossible.
Know, people, you got to brief people where you're going to, you know what I mean? There's you alone. If you can't put one foot in front of the other, you can't get down that mountain. So there is always a gray area where people don't get it. They don't understand, you know, the severity, you know, that you... what you need to do to get down.
How old do you have to be? I mean, if you get beyond a certain age, you can't go up there, right?
Mm.
I mean, there's parameters. No matter how fit you think you are, and no matter how big a deal you are, how much experience you've got, you know, beyond a certain age or a certain level of fitness, you just shouldn't be trying.
Yeah, but you see, being the highest mountain in the world, those records are always kind of being tested, you know. Yeah. So you have an environment where people are trying to break records, trying to do things, and it's not the environment where you should be trying that, because it's in normal terms, it's one mistake and you're done, you know, let alone if you're now pushing a limit in terms of how old you can be to summit and all that thing. So it is a mountain that, you know, it's a mountain of dreams. So, you know, a lot of people
turn you on if a guy's been up a mountain. Come on, tell the truth.
No, I mean,
if a guy's been up a mountain, aren't you more likely to kind of want him? I mean, he's proven he's an alpha male, right? No.
My question is for
doesn't do it.
My belly's not turned on by you at all.
My question is for these morons who like the sound of the idea of them climbing a mountain, and then when they get there, they realize, oh, I can't do it.
Yeah, and then they make it a problem for you.
I mean, what would you say to somebody who's possibly considering climbing, thinking that, oh yeah, this is something that I could do?
Tell them to carry the shit drum.
I mean, mentally, physically, how would one need to prepare for that?
Yeah, look, I think there are other mountains in the world that you can underestimate and you'll be able to come out, you know, alive. But Everest is not a place where you should even think of without experience, you know. So you must have climbed.
How about just mess around in the Pilansberg? You know, why people must overextend themselves? Yeah. If you're not ready for it, don't go there, right? Yeah. Is that what you would say to people?
100%. You know, you need the experience. You need also know yourself in a life or death situation where you've put pushing yourself to that very limit. You know, so my training was always relative. You know, when I did hypoxic training in the pool, where you like,
all about?
So you hold your breath and you do laps under the pool, in the pool. I had to have someone on standby because I was pushing those barriers to try. You know, I was willing to kind of pass out.
At all?
No, but you know, that's how far you got to push yourself. So it's literally, you need someone. You have to reenact a scenario, and if someone's not training, you know, making things relative, you're training to save your life. You're not training just to finish a marathon. You know, so definitely people that, you know, want to try and do these things, you need a experience too. You have to have climbed other mountains, preferably 8,000 meter mountains, so you have that elevation experience.
Didn't your parents try to talk you out of this, and friends and family and people who care about you? Don't they try to sit you down and say, now listen, you idiot, there are other ways for you to like experience some kind of exhilaration and to bring attention to this Huntington's disease. You don't have to do this. Don't people try to talk you out of it all the time?
No, definitely. You know, one of the researchers also said, you know, it's taken four generations to clear this thing out your family. Don't go, you know, lose your life doing this thing.
Yeah, exactly. But you don't have the problem.
Our friends and family for a while initially, that, you know, they always think, oh, shit, is he really going to, you know, go to that that place? And after the earthquake, my family was like, you're never going back there. And everyone, but they knew the reality was, even before I got home, they're like, geez, like, you know, we know it's a couple of months and then he's going back again. So
now, listen, what is there any kind of social interaction at those heights? Do people just want to get away from each other? Or, I mean, are there any hot chicks up there? Is there anything that we don't know that we need to know about how exciting it is?
Well, a base camp 10 is like your average 6 out of 10, oh, 5 shit. Out of 10.
So
yeah, you don't...
Really, basically everyone looks terrible. even the women have beards. Am I right? It's just bad because it's up there. It's miserable. Everyone's a Yeti or a Sasquatch.
Was there anything kind of underwhelming about the experience? Like, you prepare for it, you kind of imagine what it's going to be like. At any stage through the thing, did you think, well, that's easier than I thought, or, okay, that wasn't so great?
Easier, not really. You know, you have, every day on Everest is, you know, a bit of torture, and, you know, you have a lot of time too, so you always got to control your thoughts. You know, higher up, I did adjust better, so I really enjoyed myself. But if you haven't acclimatized well, it can be a really, really terrible experience, you know.
And that doesn't really make any difference how fit you are. It's just a personal thing.
It is a personal thing, how you adapt. But also, if you haven't, you know, if you're now feeling ill and you're not fit enough, you know, you're taking a lot more strain. But, you know, there wasn't anything that, for me, that was pretty much an anticlimax. I'm not the biggest fan of the walk into base camp, just because, you know, there's a lot of people just hiking. And if you're climbing and there's a lot of hikers, it's like there's a feud between the two. It's like,
no, they're inferior to you. say what it is.
We just have a lot more on the line, put it that way. You know, they just, you know, you've spent a lot more money. You're a 2-month expedition.
What does it
for
cost
10 days.
To try and climb Everest?
Between $20,000 and $100,000. Eh? Jesus. So
and the Sherpas, they're just the roughest, toughest guys in the whole world.
Yeah, look, they're awesome. You know, whenever I go to Nepal, I climb with one guy. You know, Pasang Nima. We call him Pocket Rocket. He's a little
Pasang Nima.
Yeah, Pasang Nima.
And he goes
he's
up
so
there in
epic.
Like flip flops and shorts.
Not really.
Like a Saturday afternoon, really. I'm just chilling.
What's wrong with you, white man?
Yeah, I'll take 2 bags today.
Yeah.
So what's next for you? I mean, if you've climbed Everest, are there harder mountains to climb than that? They say K2 is a bastard.
K2, just because it's traditionally done without oxygen. You know, it's been seen as like the holy grail of, you know, if you can do that without oxygen, it is. But over 8,000 meters, definitely it has more avalanche risk, a lot more more technical sections than Everest. But K2, it's also really weather dependent. You know, I'd love to just go check it out, you know, even from base camp. For me, if I climb...
I'll help you. Google Earth, my friend. You don't have to go up there.
If I climb a mountain, I have to, you know, have studied it really well. But, you know, K2 is still 400 vertical meters lower than Everest. There's no doubt it is slightly more technical, but there's been people that have climbed K2, but the 400 vertical meters on Everest is just, they can't do it. You know, there's people, yes, it is more technical, but, you know, the elevation on Everest, it's still much higher, you know. That 400 vertical meters is at least 4 hours climbing, you know, so...
Aconcagua in South America, you've done that?
Yeah.
Wow, that's...
I'd do a speed climb there, definitely. It has...
apparently also a really interesting place to be in the Andes, yeah. Right?
No, it's awesome. But so look, for me, a polar crossing has always interested me. You know, I do have the attitude to be able to spend a lot of time alone and without support, so solo. So you're dragging all your stuff.
Ugh. Why do you want to do this?
Look, that's something I wouldn't...
How about sitting at the fire in winter? And how about drinking chicken soup and having a wife and being calm and quiet and reading books? What's wrong with you?
Yeah.
You're mentally ill. What's wrong with you? Ben, would you do any of this stuff?
Gareth, I really wouldn't. No, not the slightest.
No, I'm a pussy. Yeah. I would never be able to do something like that. And it's commendable that there are people who can, because essentially that makes you better specimens than the rest of us.
No, but look, you say you'd never done it. Nuno, my best friend, he climbed with me on
Kilimanjaro. No, don't tell us who your best friend is.
Nuno.
Nuno, get over to this microphone.
So,
have you known this man? How long have you known this guy?
Since we're 4 years old. But let me tell you a story quickly.
Did you climb up together?
On Kilimanjaro.
Yeah, Kilimanjaro.
Madman. Both of you.
Yeah.
No, but look, Nuno's the type of guy, he was the type that said he'd never do it.
Okay? Nuno, did you have to carry the shit drum?
No, no. I think I only shat on day four then.
Wow. And you get constipated on the mountain?
I think one guy on our team only shat on the seventh day, like wow. Just before summer.
He must have been really desperate by that time.
He's a four-time Olympian, saying.
Yeah.
Wow. Do you guys hang around with only mountain climbers?
I'm not a mountain climber.
Do you have any fat friends?
He used to be
fat. I was a fat friend, yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
And you climbed this, so there's hope for all of us. Flax, you could end up climbing these mountains one day. I mean, you were fat once. Yeah, who knows? Is this something that interests you?
Not really. I don't think I can keep my shit in for that long.
I'm not going to tell anyone to listen to this. It's just get in the gutter.
It's so embarrassing. This is meant to be about how heroic you are climbing mountains. It's turned very lavatorial.
Well, let me bring it back. I think everyone's got a mountain in their life to challenge, okay? So although this poetic. Might not be our thing, I mean, for you, Gareth, it might be carrying someone's shit bucket. Everyone's got a mountain, so to speak. Okay, Lyle's just done the biggest thing possible, the most literal thing.
Trust me, the reason I wanted him in here is because I have massive respect for someone who could do this stuff.
I mean, someone's Everest could be going back to gym this week.
Yeah, that's true.
Or just saying no to fried food. Yeah. Everyone's got their own Everest.
We're all climbing our own personal mountains, you know, so...
Wow, this is very inspirational. I'm starting to feel a swell in my chest.
It's so difficult to do.
This motivational stuff is not your scene usually, Gary.
We just try to balance the shit here. It's so difficult.
Climb every mountain, ford every stream. Mubs, what are you going to be climbing today? A ladder to change a light bulb?
What is your Everest today, my buddy?
Oh, man.
Now, this is quite something.
Too deep, eh?
So, you want to cross the poles now. That's what you want to do next. Both?
South Pole.
That's the tougher one.
Yeah, solo and unsupported. But
solo?
Solo. I mean, yeah.
Then if you die, no one will even know where to find you.
What happens if a gang of surly... polar bears.
There are no polar bears in the South Pole. You could be attacked by leopard seals.
Yeah.
What's wrong with
that? Why is it important for you to do it solo? What's that about?
Because he doesn't want to drag Nuno along with him. Nuno's a dead weight. He's going to hold him back. He's going to have to go slow with you, right?
Yeah.
You're a problem.
No, look, for me it does differentiate, you know, the person. You know, if you can do something solo and unsupported, you're totally dependent on yourself, where someone with great support, you know, a different caliber could maybe achieve it, where, you know, I believe I can do it without any support, you know, and, you know, for me, I've always been that self-sufficient person on an expedition.
Do you not like people?
I love people. No, okay, I love people.
For safety as well, because, yeah, you know, also no, like cabin fever. If you see someone for 73 days, okay,
and you
just hate the way their mouth looks, you'll murder them.
Yeah.
And then suddenly you go to
punch a smug face.
What do you murder someone?
What do you eat when you're at the top of Everest, and what are you going to take if you go on the South Pole expedition? Is there anything nice? I mean, is it all like really lightweight, powdery? Yeah.
It's like freeze-dried because then it's lightweight. The crossing the South Pole, you have to be even more technical. You know, like high calorific foods, like, you know, you can't carry a lot. So even you're taking like a teaspoon of olive oil on the odd occasion, honey, and, you know, it's really specific when you go with that sort of diet because you can't carry a lot. So you need small volumes that are high calorific, but your body's degenerating because you can never... have the right amount of calories in those environments. So
no wonder it took the guy 7 days to get a press on then.
Yeah, all exactly. Wow. Damn right. Hey, Tuso wants to talk to you. Is he on the phone or on Skype? What do we got? Phone. Okay, let me go to Tuso quickly. Wants to ask you some things. I think this is fascinating. I really do.
I know this name.
You do? Tuso, you want to talk to Lyle?
Yeah, hi, Gareth. How are you?
Yeah, good, man. What's up?
Fine, thanks. Lyle, how are you, buddy?
Good, man. What's happening?
Do you two know each other?
Yes, well, from the cricket a long time ago.
Yes.
Yeah, no, I was just saying, Lyle, I see you bought an Aston Martin the other day and you still slamming mountains. What's wrong with you?
Jeez.
Exactly, so to keep asking.
Why are you bringing up my past like that, Tucson?
So hang on, did you play? You two played cricket together?
Yeah.
But he was very good. He was, but now I just want to say, brother, I'm very happy. I'm you inspired me. I like what you're doing, and just keep on going, right?
Thanks, Tuso, man. We must catch cool, up buddy, soon, yeah. Brother.
Yeah, Tuso, go with him across the South Pole. Let's see how that works out. I don't know any black people in the South Pole. Wow.
Definitely won't work, buddy. Trust me about that one. Yeah. I'm scared of a little artist there. Eh?
No, you're smart enough to stay in your warm house. That's
okay,
the difference.
Okay, cool. Cheers, buddy. All right, just keep on going, buddy. Eh?
Thanks, Tuso.
Nice. Cool, all right, there we go. You got lots of friends and fans. This is quite extraordinary, though. And I mean, I'm a sarcastic guy, but there's no way you can minimize the kind of human achievement, the kind of experience. I don't know anybody who wouldn't like to know how it feels. Mm. No matter how hard they don't want to necessarily feel the slog all the way up or the harder part all the way down, I suppose, because then you know you've got nothing to look forward to but base camp. But to be able to look out over the world from the very top, that's got to feel majestic, man. No, even if it's 3 in the morning, right?
And you know, you've worked pretty much 2 months for a view that's only going to last a few minutes, you know, and
for you in the dark.
Yeah. But it's still that special, you know. You've earned that spot, you know, and you know you've got yourself to that point, you know.
How many people have gone up there?
It's about just over 3,000 now, but people with multiple summits as well. South Africa, I'm number 30.
Out of 7 billion people, 3,000 and something people have ever got to the top of the world.
Yeah, a little elite club, eh?
Yeah. They don't give you a medal or something when you come down. They give those losers at the Comrades Marathon medals when they take 10 hours to do the stupid thing. They should give you a medal. Huh?
Yeah.
Why are you pointing at Nuno?
I want to take pictures.
Oh, right. Okay. Thought you told him to bring your shit back. That's what he's there for, right? Yes, Flax, what's up? He's your Sherpa in South Africa, right? Is that what Nuno is? He's your Sherpa when you're around here. Okay.
I can confirm there is money in climbing mountains.
Oh, yeah?
He does drive an Aston Martin.
What? Jeez. Are you driving an Aston?
Yeah.
What's that all about? Yeah, fill me in. What's the story here? Come on, Lyle Turner.
Well, it was my present after I got back.
From who?
From me. I was like, if I survive, I'll get something nice.
So,
I've always been a car nutter, man.
Well, I mean, tell me more. An Aston Martin's not just a... You know, for some people, a dream car is just something with an engine that's bigger than a lawnmower.
Lawnmower.
Yeah, come on. I mean, when did you get the Aston? That's a big deal.
About 2 weeks after I got back.
Unreal, dude.
Yeah.
You drive that thing fast?
Yeah, it's an awesome car. But no, there's not money in climbing mountains. Jeez, it's hard.
No, that costs too much.
Yeah, if you try to get a sponsor, it's pretty much a full-time job, you know, so you rather just work hard and
nice.
Save right and make
so
sure.
So what are you doing
there
today? What boring shit do you do? And are you going to go and...
Well, the Aston's got to go for service after this.
That's unfortunate.
Yeah.
Do you have to reply to emails and other dreary stuff that the rest of us humans do?
Yes.
Right.
Unfortunately. But then we have a few meetings in Santon.
You got a girlfriend?
Yes.
Okay. How long you two been together?
Since after the earthquake. So she patched and mended me back together.
Was she up there?
No.
No. She's smarter than that, right? So when she she's impressed because she probably has, she has this guy who's been up Everest. This is no small thing. This is a big deal. It's not some loser who sits at home and eats chips.
Eats chips.
Huh?
And just climbs up to the kitchen.
She must bang you like a swing door in a hurricane. Thinking, oh, God, you got up Everest, yeah! Huh? Must be hardcore with you two. Can you imagine what goes on?
This is very uncomfortable at the moment for everyone involved.
Telling all her friends. Yeah, she's telling all her friends. Yep. That dick went up Everest.
Lyle will never climb another mountain on the back of this interview. You know what, sure it's done.
Listen, man. I have the world of respect for you.
Thanks.
You know that. You've done extremely interesting things in your life. And you're 26. What on earth are you going to do to fill the rest of your life up?
Yeah.
South Pole crossing? That'll probably knock another 5 years off your life. And then what? What are you going to do?
Maybe I should become an astronaut.
You could.
Go to space.
You seem to have the resilience.
Yeah.
Like, space is the only thing that might kill you.
Yeah.
Like,
but I'm
can
sure
you imagine it? Garrison, have you back asking shit questions?
Shit
about
questions,
space.
Yeah.
Okay, so does it float?
Like this, so tell us now.
All right, yeah, get out of here and go and conquer another mountain. You're a very inspiring guy. And how can we find out more about your foundation, and if people want to get involved, and maybe you can, you know, tell them some more about climbing mountains?
Yep. Foundation-wise, best is to go to www.hdyo.org.
H-D-Y-O. Yeah. What does that stand for? Huntington's Disease
Youth Organization.
H-D-Y-O.org.
Yep. Org, yeah. And okay. Then otherwise, just get in touch with me on Twitter or wherever, and just to find out more info, I can direct you whatever you need.
Amazing. Thank you, man. Thanks for coming in to see awesome. Us this morning.
Thank you, guys.
It was very that's very interesting and inspiring. All right. It's Tuesday morning. We've got Timothy Maurice coming up next. Let me quickly give you a look at the lineup for this morning and fill you in on what you might be missing out on if you stop listening now. You've got Timothy Maurice with Unbranded, and he's going to be looking at how art in Africa has shaped brand Africa and how the future of brand Africa can be elevated by a deeper understanding of African art. Pulani Kingston will be in. Andrea Nett will be in there with the cyber health feature. And then we've got Matt Brown in Digital Kung Fu. Andrew Smith, the co-founder and CEO of YuppieChef.com, is in to talk about e-commerce and how you sell really sexy stuff online. He'll unpack the meat and potatoes of how a brand was built and lessons that the founders have learned over the past 10 years. You want to listen to that, trust me. Then it's Sipping Tea with Tumi Morake. And that's always the most exciting thing on a Tuesday morning, in case you have... I mean, there is no stone unturned with Tumi Morake.
Yeah, it's a good show, that.
Sometimes really Mabali joins her, if she's feeling up to it. And then they talk about everything. The Laws of Life with Gary Hertzberg. Nondumiso opens up about a glimpse into the soul-stripping phenomenon of revenge porn and how they sought revenge. Also, about the titillating movements that are being made in the sex industry. It's a very interesting podcast, The Laws of Life with Gary Hertzberg. The Daily Maverick Show with Kingsley Kipuri and the team, the biggest news stories, and it's all dealt with in a very unconventional manner. Then, Beyond Ears and Eyes with Shemaine and Liesel. That's our spiritual show. Then, In Conference with Michael Jackson, and 360 Biz with Teboho Mafodi and Bulelani Balabala. That's it from us. Let me wrap up with the un-news for this morning. This is what you absolutely need to know. And then we'll clear out of here for Timothy Maurice. SAA would like 16 billion rand. That's what Dudu and her friends think will keep them afloat for another year or two. So they issued a newspaper ad asking for that amount. Whoever is willing to cough up this figure will be guaranteed cockpit visits with the captain on every flight, unlimited business class toiletry bags, and 30 kilograms of unchecked luggage to and from South American countries twice a year. Isn't that good? That's a good deal. India is looking to curb fatal road accidents by covering cars that roam rural areas with glow-in-the-dark paint. And American universities are following suit by covering rapey jocks in the paint too, to make them stand out at night on campuses. So look out for that. And finally, Proteas coach Russell Domingo celebrates his birthday today. He's massively excited about this and hopes that the milestone may actually get him noticed by the players in the dressing room for the first time this year. Or maybe he should try some of that glow-in-the-dark paint too. All right, we'll see you tomorrow. Have a good day. Blah, 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 blah. And thank you, Mubs. Thank you, Ben. Thank you, Pashida. Thank you, Flex. Most especially, thank you to you. CliffCentral.com.